Blog Talk Radio.
Beauty Shop for the Soul is a magnificent transformation to restore, cleanse, and tap into the essence of who you truly are. Beauty Shop for the Soul gives you the experience of a new makeover from inside out. Beauty Shop for the Soul was a universal gift to be birthed into the world to host Joanne Buckner. Joanne received this incredible gift through a meditation to share with others to awaken the soul. Beauty Shop for the Soul is a true magical process of the divine being you truly are. Now sit back, relax, and let Beauty Shop for the Soul take you on a new, exciting journey with host Joanne Buckner.
Those faces of my people. The stars are beautiful. So the eyes of my people. Beautiful also is the sun. Beautiful also are the souls of my people. That's a poem by Langston Hughes, and I'm Joanne Buckner, your host for Beauty Shop for the Soul. I'll be conducting you on this journey today into that inward place of wisdom. So the focus tonight is on wisdom, what it is, and actually I'd like to just speak briefly to what it isn't. There are a lot of people that think that knowledge, i.e. degrees, particularly a number of degrees or a certain amount of education equals wisdom. It does not, not at all. Wisdom can come from even a child and often does. So we're wanting to know, and according to Charles Fillmore, who was the co-founder of Unity Worldwide, both Charles and his wife, co-founders of Unity Worldwide, had back in the 1800s been healed from congenital defects or birth disorders. Myrtle herself had had a consumption, which is tuberculosis. It was called consumption in those days. And the doctors had gone as far as they could go. And Myrtle just happened to, by seeming coincidence, attend a lecture. And at this lecture, there was a metaphysician there that spoke about spiritual healing, meaning that there's a recognition of a presence and power in the universe that's greater than anything physical. And, of course, that is non-physical and infinite and eternal has infinite and eternal power, where that is physical soon fades away over time. So through Myrtle and Charles's healing, initially just Myrtle, Charles considered himself to be scientific, and he wasn't particularly interested until his wife had a healing. And then he himself, who had been lame all of his life, began to investigate into these universal laws and principles, and of course a lot of the teachings were based upon the scripture. And through his desire and dedication, devotion, and willingness to set aside beliefs that no longer served him and open up to some universal principles and laws, he himself was healed. So, of course, people that knew their circumstances prior to this experience, and they had their own disorders, wanted to know what had they done and how could they have some of it. And so they began to teach others what they had learned, and little by little, one by one, other people had healing. And eventually what unfolded was what is today Unity Worldwide. It's based in Missouri. It's an incredible place, but Charles Fillmore was given this gift through his I'll say spiritual awakening, and through his genius. This program, I'm calling it program, but it's called the Faculties of Man, the 12 Powers. And there are, according to Fillmore, as well as according to some doctors, there are ganglionic centers in our body. And this is a group of nerves, and there are 12 of those. And the interesting thing about the 12 Faculties of Man, they are faith and strength, They are love, wisdom, power, imagination, understanding, will, zeal, order, renunciation, and life. Now, all of these are governed by what is considered to be the Christ consciousness. So there's a premise to all this, and this premise, according to Charles Fillmore, is that this consciousness is the same consciousness that was exemplified by the man that we call Jesus, who represents or is called Jesus the Christ. Christ means Christos, or the highest consciousness that we've known that anyone has ever achieved. And I'm restating that, the highest one that we've known that anyone has ever achieved. So these disciples who were recruited by Jesus himself, each one represents a faculty, and there exists in us a ganglionic nerve center that is impacted upon our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions. So in the process of this, one of these is wisdom. The center for wisdom is located in the solar plexus area of the body. In the solar plexus area, which is immediately beneath the rib cage, but this is a place where it's called the wisdom center, or the second brain. And this is a place that is literally the pit of the stomach. And this is where food is treated and processed and redirected to the various parts of the body, the muscles, the nerves, the eyes and ears, fingernails, etc. So that's the physical location of it. But there is also the other aspect of it. It is the center of wisdom and judgment. It's a place where decision-making is done, or as is the case sometimes, indecisiveness. And when there's an indecisiveness that is repeated over an extended period of time and frequently done, sometimes there's a disorder that is like ulcers, upset stomach, reflux, acid reflux. Anyway, there's so many things that happen according to the impact.
Joanne, this is Carol. Someone in the chat room mentioned that it was really hard to hear you, so said it's a little muffled sounding. So is there any way you can make it a little clearer?
Let me try, of course.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. I just wanted to let you know.
Thank you for letting me know. I'm moving a little bit. Tell me if it's more clear, I hope. Is it?
Okay, let me see. It sounds fine to me.
Okay, and so in the chat room?
Yeah, it is. They said yes. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Well, what I was sharing, and hopefully this is coming through more clearly, is today the focus is on wisdom. And wisdom has to do with a faculty that is one of the powers of man. And each of these, there are 12 powers or 12 faculties, and they're actually locations in our body that are similar to the chakras. You know, each chakra is related to an aspect of our, like, for example, the first chakra is related to our survival. So in the chakras, we have one that represents faith, which we talked about before, and each of them is related to one of the disciples and a personality that was cultivated in them by that Christ, or the Christos, the Christ consciousness. So wisdom is represented by, James, who was the brother of John, and the faculty for wisdom is the solar plexus area. James was the one that represents wisdom, and his brother was John. The two of them are called the sons of Zebedee, and there's a correlation between the relationship of brothers and the relationship between the solar plexus and the heart center. Or the heart represents, of course, love, and the solar plexus, wisdom. And so there's that relationship there to love and wisdom, and the kind of balance that occurs when we align ourselves with our true essence. And our true essence actually is love. That is the stuff of which we were made. And so in this environment, in the Eastern Hemisphere, people have for thousands of years had these kinds of practices, here we historically in the West medically look at the physical body, which of course obviously is important, but it's difficult to separate our minds and our spirits and our bodies. And so that's where the term holistic health comes in. And what we're looking at is how can we become more aware of the impact of, for example, what we say. I have a book by a medical doctor that says, your body hears every word you say. And then there's a lot of talk about the subconscious can't take a joke. So everything operates according to law, and is that universal law. And since we have been made by this infinite intelligence that is everywhere present, and it operates according to law, it's the same intelligence that created the sun and moon and stars and set them into the heavens, and then, of course, keeps them, you know, in the atmosphere. Well, this is the intelligence that is omnipresent, meaning it is in us, in every single cell of our body. And the most recent research in years is telling us that there is that place in us in every single cell. Some scientists say 50 trillion, some have said as low as 30 trillion, others 75, and some say 100. If they were laid out, these cells, one at a time, it would stretch out hundreds of thousands of miles. Well, they're calling this the DNA, and of course, there's been a lot of, talk about DNA tracing, hereditary genetics, and all of these kind of things. Well, I have a terminology. DNA is our divine natural ability. And in our divine natural ability, when we are out of alignment with truth, we cannot tap into that essence. And so all of Charles Fillmore's work, as well as many others in what we call ancient wisdom or new thought, because it's not new at all, it's been around, but it's new to those who've not yet been exposed to it. And so as we discover that we are contributors to our physical, mental, and emotional well-being, then with that understanding, we can then become responsible and accountable for what is happening in our lives. And as we become responsible and accountable, as Wayne Dyer says, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. I'm a storyteller. And as a storyteller, of course, I say, you know, stories were the first method of teaching and the first method of healing. And even today, it still goes on in and out of a place that we call school. It goes on in the home. Children learn what they live and live what they learn. And so in this faculty of wisdom, we began to understand the power that is, you could say, endowed or invested in us. And so I want to use a little bit of time today to talk about a few stories. And just going back to Langston Hughes' poem for a moment, you know, I always love this poem, Faces, by Langston Hughes, who was, for those of you who may not know, a poet laureate during the Harlem Renaissance back in the 1920s. But we tend to think of ourselves as much smaller or much less than how phenomenally we are made, as it says in Psalm 139. So we are just marvelously and magnificent spiritual beings. And, yes, we are having a human experience. But the goal is to tap into that essence in us that is beyond anything that we could ever actually describe. And so in this, we learn to become aware of and accountable for the words of our mouth. In other words, what comes out of our mouth. And so I have a couple of little stories that I want to share with you today that, to me, it talks about or it shows how we use our mouths and our actions, and then what unbeknownst to us, they're picked up by others, particularly our children and those who are around us. And, you know, in the scriptures, it talks about life and death, or in the power of the tongue, and that words can heal or kill. When I was a kid, they used to say that little, maybe many of you have said it, sticks and stones could break my bones, but words can never hurt. But we know now through muscle testing and a number of other ways, there are electronics and electrodes that can be put on you. And you can be directed to have a thought, and by the thought that you're having at any given moment, that will register on the machine either something to the far left or to the far right, meaning that it is a negative. In other words, something that doesn't serve your well-being. Or you can, of course, change that thought, change the way of thinking, and change your life. So one of the things that we do in Beauty Shop for the Soul, and perhaps there's someone online who has not been introduced to Beauty Shop for the Soul. So let me just take a moment and tell you about that. Beauty Shop for the Soul, as it said in the intro, is a program that was given to me during a meditation. And in this meditation, just the title, Beauty Shop for the Soul, came up, and I heard it very clearly, and I also, it came not with a verbal explanation, but an understanding, an inner knowing, that Beauty Shop for the Soul is a transformative process that parallels the traditional beauty shop. When you go to the traditional beauty shop, the cosmetologist, the beautician, whatever you want to call this person, they examine your hair and your scalp, and after their assessment, they tell you their findings, and they make recommendations for how you can improve the condition of your hair and scalp. You could conceivably have split ends. You could have dry scalp. There are just many things that you could lose the vibrancy in your hair or the luster in your hair. And these things relate even to our personalities. I remember once, even years ago, being at my daughter's house, and as a kid, she had had really thick hair, coarse, and fairly long. And this is in her, I'll say, maybe 20s, 30s, I'm not sure. But anyway, her hair looked like I had never seen it look before. And so I said to her, "What is happening to your hair?" And she said, surprisingly, "Mom, I've just been broke," meaning no money, "for so long that my hair is broke." And I thought that was a very profound statement, because they know now, as I said earlier, in science, that our thoughts and our words impact upon our bodies, that there's a biochemical reaction at a cellular level. And whenever we have repeated thoughts over a sustained period of time, and they say, of course, in science and in medicine, women have about 65,000 thoughts a day. Men have less, about 55,000. But about 90% of those, it's the same thought over and over and over. And so what happens, this begins to have its impact upon our physical, mental, and emotional well-being. So in Beauty Shop for the Soul, where the traditional beauty shop, the cosmetologist would look at your hair and your scalp and do an assessment. But in Beauty Shop for the Soul, the client would have decided that no matter how wonderful their life is or is not, was or was not, that they recognize that there is infinite potential and limitless possibilities for it to be better, greater. And so the question then becomes, what can I do to enhance my life in terms of quality of life and longevity as well? And so you would make the assessment, and then in the traditional beauty shop, the next step, of course, is to shampoo or to cleanse the hair and the scalp. In Beauty Shop for the Soul, you would be purifying the thoughts that no longer serve you. Now, this is a challenge sometimes because, you know, it's easy to know if you're being cruel and unkind and thoughtless. That shows up pretty easily if you are robbing, stealing, and et cetera. But we're so complex and so multidimensional that we have language that we use, and this language, unbeknownst to us, has the potential to either heal or kill, according to the scriptures, which I subscribe to. And so, for example, one of the things that the scripture talks about is it is the rudder on a ship that controls the direction of the ship. Now, a ship can weigh thousands of tons, and the rudder would be only a couple of hundred of tons. But that rudder will control those thousands of tons on the ship. And if we look at a horse, it is the bit, the tiny bit in the horse's mouth that the rider is able to control the direction in which he or she wants this horse to go. Well, what do you think it is in man? What do you think it is in you? The tongue. So it's that small, small thing according to the weight of the average man and the average woman. It is our tongue that directs the pattern of our life, our health, our relationships, and all the aspects of our being. So as we become aware of this, then there's that purification process. We learn to speak a new language. We learn to speak a language that is in alignment with our true essence. And so words, in the same way that if we wanted to be an attorney, you'd have to learn the vernacular of law in order to be successful as an attorney. If you were going to be an architect, the same thing goes. Well, with life and the issues of life, we learn the words that we use and the meditations of our hearts, meaning the things that we focus upon, soon come back to either haunt us or help us to be all that we came to be. And many of us have no idea, and I certainly didn't for a long time, what I came to be. In fact, I really thought that I didn't have a purpose. But everybody has a purpose, and we are here to discover that. And in Beauty Shop for the Soul, after the assessment and then the purification, as in the traditional beauty shop, then comes the conditioning. If something has been off condition for a while, generally it's going to take more than one treatment in order for it to stay aligned according to what the conditioning has done at that time. And in the same way that you would not go to a beauty shop and come out with a new do and, of course, a new walk, and you just feel different when you exit than you did when you came in. And so what we do then is you have to go back to the beauty shop over and over and over as long as you want to keep that new look, as long as you want to maintain that. Well, in Beauty Shop for the Soul, you also have to do it, but it has to be done on a much more frequent basis than bi-monthly or however often it is that one would go to a traditional beauty shop. In fact, it would be probably simpler to compare the frequency that you eat your physical food, which is every day and often for most of us three times a day. So if you eat food three times a day and for whatever reason you stop that pattern and now you go days without eating and maybe a week or so, you would be then what? Physically weak. So when you are physically weak, then you are unable to function and tap into your DNA, divine natural ability. It's not gone anywhere. It's just dormant. And in the same way that when you go to a bank where you've made deposits and have an account, if you can't identify yourself, then you cannot make a withdrawal, even though the funds there belong to you. Or the same thing in your spiritual bank account. If you cannot recognize yourself as having, in other words, like my daughter said, she had been broke for such a long time that her hair was broke. Well, it may be the absence of funds at that moment, but it's the language that we are talking about, the fact that, because this is just information that's being communicated to us by the universe, that something about us that we have not discovered yet, because we live in an infinite, abundant universe. So all around us, everywhere present, is this infinite, inexhaustible source and substance of supply. There's only one source. So sometimes we think that the source of supply is the government, is the job, or the spouse, or anything outside of ourselves. But in fact, the source of our supply is an inside job. We have, as this I was starting to say earlier, in the DNA in every cell of our body, it's the same inscription. And it has all the information that one would need to transform their lives. So we begin this exploration process. And you know that in this process, we don't usually have a road to the master's experience. That's possible. I probably would not want to have it in that way. I'd rather for it to be done gently and more harmoniously and et cetera. But it doesn't matter. Sooner or later, we are pushed or pulled into our good. in New Thought, we often say sometimes we have to be forced into our good. And that has happened to me before on one occasion where, in fact, it happened more than once where I had a job and unexpectedly it was terminated. And it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me before. If it had not been, if it had not happened, I probably would still be, well, not now, I'm retired, but I probably would have retired from that job many years later, and that would have been okay too. But what happened as a result of that termination, it opened not only an avenue for me to make a change in my life, but it also opened the door for me to get back in school, where I had had initially only a high school education, and I shouldn't say only, I had a high school education, but I was able to get back in and get an undergraduate degree and then go back and get a graduate degree. The universe opened the door for me through being pushed out of a position that up till then I had thought was the best job that I ever had, and subsequent to that, I ended up with better and better and better jobs. And, of course, one of my goals had been to inspire my children. I was a divorcee with three children, and I wanted them to pursue a higher education. And I knew that the best way to do that was for me, for myself, to pursue a higher education. So anyway, the closing of that job was the opening of the door for a new aspect of my life. And whenever we step out, it feels, of course, uncomfortable initially, but that's because we step out of our comfort zone. And so in places like Beauty Shop for the Soul, where you could have an empowerment partner, there's so many things that you could do, but you're learning some new techniques and steps. And we'll go over some of those at another time to see what this purification process is like. But in this context of wisdom, there is a story here about, it's called The Wooden Bowl, and it's about a four-year-old child. And this child was having dinner with his parents, and a grandfather lived with them, and the grandfather was frail and elderly, and it was his son and daughter-in-law and their four-year-old son. So every day they ate dinner together at the family table. But the elderly grandfather had shaky hands and failing eyesight, and he made a really strange eating sound, and this was disturbing to his son and his daughter-in-law. And his food would roll off of his plate, peas would roll off of his spoon onto the floor, and when he grasped the glass of milk, the milk would spill off on the tablecloth. So the son and the daughter-in-law became irritated with the mess, and they decided between them that they needed to do something about the father. The son said he'd had enough of this spilled milk, noisy eating, and food all over the place. So the husband and the wife, which is to say the son and daughter-in-law, they set a small table in the corner. And there the grandfather was placed where he sat alone while the rest of the family enjoyed dinner. Soon the grandfather's head had broken a dish or two, and his food was served in a wooden bowl because he had broken dishes before. So when the family glanced in the father's direction, sometimes he had a tear in his eyes. He sat alone. And still, the only words the couple had for him were very sharp, and they would reprimand him for making a mess, for dropping sparks, for spilling food, knocking over milk. And the four-year-old kid, guess what? Children live what they learn. He watched it all in silence. And then one evening before supper, the father noticed that his son was playing with wood scraps on the floor. So he asked the child sweetly, "What are you making?" And the child responded, "Oh, I'm making a little bowl for you and Mama to eat your food in when I grow up." The four-year-old smiled and just went back to work, making the wooden bowl for his parents. But these words kind of struck and stuck in the parents' hearts and in their heads, and they were speechless. And then it was the tears that started to flow down their cheeks. And though no words had been spoken, both of them knew what must be done. So that evening, the husband took the grandfather's hand and gently led him back to the family table. And for the remainder of his days, he ate every meal with the family. And for some reason, neither the husband nor the wife seemed to care any longer when a fork was dropped, when milk was spilled, or the tablecloth was soiled. Now, this is an example of children learning what they live, and they do observe every single thing that you say or that you do, and the power of your words becomes the power of their words and will direct their lives, just like that bit in the horse's mouth, or like the rudder on the ship. Their tongue will become the guiding thing for their lives. I wrote a little poem some years ago, and I think it has to do with wisdom, and it's called Me and Mama. And I know that when I was a child, and perhaps maybe some of you have the same, I want to just pause for a minute and check. Yeah, is there anyone, and let me just say, if there's someone who would like to speak to me, please push 1 on your phone, and we will bring you in so that you can either ask a question or make a comment. And if not, Carol, then I'll just continue.
Yeah, I'm just going to continue. The number to call in is 646-200-4169, and remember to push 1 if you would like to speak with Joanne.
Okay. Thank you, Carol. And so what happened is that when I was a little child, I often felt misunderstood by my parents in general and by my mother in particular. And so, but as I got older, I discovered that sometimes I did things and I didn't really have any idea why I did what I had just done. And I would even say that to myself. And then as I got a little older, it dawned on me that if that were true of me, probably it would be true of my mother as well. Perhaps there were times when my mother had done things and she had not understood why she had done the things. And so I ended up writing this poem, and it says, "Sometimes I wish Mama had understood me better. Sometimes I wish that I had better understood Mama. Then I wish that Mama had better understood Mama and I had better understood me. But if we had better understood we, I wonder who I'd be. Not me, and I like me. Just as I like Mama. Mama and me, we were we." And so we grow into wisdom as we move from childhood into adolescence, into young adult, and then into the middle stages of life, and so forth and so on. And that is where the wisdom comes from, having lived experiences that we now take the knowledge that we acquired, whether it was in the classroom or in the neighborhood, we use this wisely. And so this is, again, a part of Beauty Shop for the Soul, and how will you know that you are making a wise decision or not? Sometimes we have questions about decisions that we make, and perhaps you have questioned it. But there are different ways. First of all, there is a sense often of peace when the decision that you make has been one of wisdom, whereas sometimes, and I certainly have been guilty of this before, making a decision that I thought was going to make me happy, and it did for just a moment. And then, after then, I certainly had a lot of discomfort about it, which said to me that that was not a Phi Beta Kappa move, that I had actually made a decision based upon probably judgment, criticism, and not upon the essence of who I am, and certainly not the essence of who the person or persons were that I had made this decision about. And so one of the other aspects of wisdom that came for me was years ago I had a job, and it was, to me, the I'd say worst job that I'd ever had, because there were so many things going on in this place. And I ended up having a desk audit and several other things, filed some complaints and things, and it wasn't that these things weren't happening, they were. However, what was being revealed to me was, what was my purpose of being in this place? And it was in another meditation. It would be years later before Beauty Shop for the Soul came in a meditation, but this was back in, I'll say in the 80s. In this meditation, I was taken back to a time when I was 13 and 14 the same year. My birthday is late in the year. And there were a couple of events. Actually, they were around the deaths of significant people in my life. And there was a lot of drama trauma around it. And in this meditation, it was showing me that, it was showing me that there had been some wounds, some injuries at a soul level. And that because I had not healed from that over years and even decades, there were many other opportunities for me to discover that those wounds, that those injuries were still there, buried alive. And as long as I had not recognized this, then the wounds began to be pushed deeper, but they were still alive and kicking. And so this experience of having this job where I had done a desk audit and whatever other things I had done was simply the crescendo effect of something building and building and building over long periods of time so that I could actually reduce the experience on the job with, I could bring it all down to one word. The things that I said happened, happened, but at, on a spiritual level or in the spiritual realm, I could look at it and recognize that it was just not being supported. That was the issue where I seemed to be stuck. And as I look back in this meditation on that period of time when I was 13 and 14, there was something going on between my parents who were then divorced but still connected by 9 children. So anyway, there was something going on unbeknownst to us what it actually was, but we got the impact of it. And so that, too, could be reduced to one word, not supported or unsupported, however you want to call that. And so I could see that until the wound was healed from that time many years ago, then this actually was just a mirror effect of that, that I had to be in a place where I could see what my purpose was for being in this place. And so I began to have an awakening and an awareness to the impact of allowing, and I didn't know that I was allowing. I knew that I felt injured. I knew I felt hurt. I knew I felt angry. I knew I felt resentful. I could name countless feelings that I had. And, of course, what we know now, and wasn't known during the days when I was 13 and 14, when we have these kind of feelings, there's something that happens biochemically to us, and it affects our whole way of being. So Bruce Lipton talks about this in the biology of belief and the biology of perception. And Candace Pert also talks about this. I don't remember the name of her book, but you can look up both of these people. And they actually recognize the structure of what happens biochemically in the body when we have upset, no matter what they are. And any of those things are not in alignment with your true essence, which is love. So then our purpose is to align ourselves to seek the kingdom of heaven, which is to say recognize that there are spiritual laws. And they're not like man-made laws. Man-made laws are made by man, and you can break them and perhaps get away with it for a while, but spiritual laws automatically outpicture themselves, and you have no control over it except to rise in consciousness above the level of consciousness that created the problem in the first place. And so that would be the law of cause and effect. And one of the things we explore in Beauty Shop for the Soul are universal laws. They exist. We didn't create them, but we do live by them, and they're totally subject to your word in the same way that the soil is totally subject to the seed that you plant in it. Whatever seed you plant in the soil is going to, by law, multiply after its own kind. There are many spiritual laws. Perhaps some of you have had an experience of wanting something so, desperately, and feel that you work and work and work and work very hard, and yet the more you work, the less you seem to experience the thing that you desire. It is something called the law of reverse effort. It's like the harder you work, the more you push it away. And so what we are learning then is that universal law to just be still, that every single thing you need to know, say, do, or be. It's already known and said and done, and it already is in the universal mind, because ultimately, like Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, said, there's only one mind, and he didn't create that. He just is repeating what the ancients have said in the ancients of days and still say to this day. So we are learning to be mindful, to understand that these laws exist and that they operate as a totally out picture. So the soul is a place, a synonym for soul is law. When you look at spirit, soul, and body, spirit needs a vehicle for its expression. And we are the place or the vehicle for the expression of spirit. And body is just the result, the effect, or the outcome of whatever seeds that have been sown into the soil. So, you know, if you were looking at a package of seeds and it was red and circular and round and it looked like cherries and you planted them thinking they are cherries, the soil knows exactly they're not cherries, they're tomatoes. And so you're going to get, because the law is every seed must multiply after its own kind. And so that's what's happening with that. And your word is your seed. Your word operates through law. And so the soul is the place where the transformation occurs, that whatever thoughts you give it, there's no hesitation from the law. It just automatically is totally subject to the word and transforms what your thoughts are and what you say into what you later harvest in your life. So spirit, soul, and body. Spirit, soul, and body. The good news is we get to change. So whatever we're looking at, whatever we're harvesting, another synonym for body is effect. It is outcome. It is the result. It is the manifestation of something. And seeds can lay dormant for years and never lose their power. Never lose their power. Back in the 1920s, King Tut's tomb was opened after a couple of thousand years, and in the tomb were seeds. Those seeds were planted, and guess what? Yep, you got it. They blossomed. So we can have thoughts that have been implanted in us even from our prenatal stage, and they've just been dormant until the right environment. They are placed in the right environment, and wham, there they are. At another time, I just had an experience last summer as I spent 4 months in the Ozarks, having a wonderful experience of exploring the Aramaic teachings of the scriptures. And so I had
to... Joanne, this is Carol again. You started sounding a little bit mumbled again. So
okay,
can you reshift again?
Thank you. Thank you for telling me. So,
yeah, because you were talking about a law, and I couldn't barely hear what that law was.
Do you remember what I said just before then?
Something about working, and never getting anywhere, and then there was the law.
Yes. Law of reverse effort.
Right, yeah. And then you were saying something about King Tut's and the seed grew, and I don't know.
I couldn't hear the rest. The law, you know, is synonymous with soul in the concept of spirit, soul, and body. You could paraphrase soul with law. And spirit needs a vehicle for its expression, and it is through the soul that it expresses itself. And you can see the manifestation of how you are using, interpreting spirit. And of course, the upside of that is you can change the way you look at things. So the law of reverse effort has to do with us thinking that we have to do the job ourselves. Many of us, and I certainly have done it before, thought that I had to do everything all by myself. Well, that's an erroneous and false belief, you know. And so you could work really hard and very diligently, and then feel like you're marching.
Not getting anywhere.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's for a lot of people are feeling that they work and not getting the results that they had their goals to.
That's correct. And so what is happening is that we get to learn to be still. as it says in Psalm 46:10, be still and know. You know, there's that part in us, in the DNA, that divine natural ability that I talked about earlier. It is available to us 24/7 at any time. And but if we don't know it exists, then it's left to providence, that it will just happen if it happens by accident or by luck or by something outside of yourself. But when when we know that this is what happens, then we can exercise this. We can understand this. So there are a lot of laws there. You know, the law of cause and effect. Often when something is manifesting or outpicturing in our lives, and we try to solve the problem by using the same consciousness that created the problem in the first place. But that doesn't work. You cannot solve a cause, an effect, use an effect. You have to go back to cause. There's a law of cause and effect. And when we go back to cause and effect, another little quick experience, I see our time is getting low. I had an experience, in fact, this is kind of personal, but I'll share it. My husband is deceased now, and I was surprised that the way that we handled money was so different, and I had no way of knowing this prior to our getting married. And because our courtship was like what I was accustomed to, wining and dining and all of those kind of things, so it was a little bit of a surprise to me that when we got married, the way that he handled his money was not the way that I traditionally handled mine. And so I began to ask, well, wait a minute. I've read a lot, heard about, and even talked about and practiced this mirror effect. And I could not see a mirror between the way the two of us handled our finances. And that was kind of disturbing to me. But anyway, I continued the exploration. And of course, I was asking the question, because generally when we ask and then become still and listen to the still small voice within, but often we're so busy we can't hear the voice when it speaks. So you have to be still and know. And so as I was asking this question, what was it that I wasn't understanding or that I needed to know? Because I didn't see a mirror. It seemed to be opposite. Because I took care of business, he didn't take care of business. And that was very disturbing. And so, of course, there were some disagreements around that. But what was revealed to me through this exploration was that back in our childhood, both of us, and I had known this man since I was a kid, we grew up in the same neighborhood. And so we both had had an experience of parents feeling that there was not enough money, both my parents and his parents. We, you know, were at an age where that was a common occurrence at those times and in the place, you know, where we lived. So anyway, what happened is what I discovered was the mirror, but it was the way that he handled his money was different. So the mirror was that consciousness of not enough. And the not enough is everything, every thought is a vibration. So in this concept of not enough, it can show up to be not enough love, not enough money, not enough trust, not enough, not enough, not enough. Whatever you don't have enough of vibrationally, we're all like a radio broadcasting station. And so the thoughts that we have go out into the universe, and then without a whole lot of time focus, and we spend a lot of time repeating stories that don't serve us. That's why we learn to retell stories. And so if you repeat it often enough, and just according to Abraham, as I mentioned last week, 17 seconds of focused attention, whether it's on the desired or the undesired, it's going to be a combustion that occurs, and it's going to magnetize your thought with whatever is vibrating at that same frequency, and that will produce the equivalent of 200 physical hours of labor. So imagine if you just focus on I'm broke, I'm broke, I'm broke, I'm broke for 17 seconds, then, of course, you get to have that experience of not having enough money. So how you handle not having enough money may not be the same way that somebody else handles not enough money or not enough love or not enough trust, you know. So the same way I came from a family that was very strict, and so some of my siblings are quite, it seemed to me from my observation, quite lenient with their children because they didn't want to be strict like our parents. And then some of us were strict like our parents because we had a different perception. We wanted what we thought would be discipline, order, etc. So I'm just wanting you to have this picture of how you can outpicture something and have a mirror effect without recognizing the mirror when you see it. And so anyway, I wanted to just point out that a part of this process of beauty shop for the soul is not only the condition, but you get to decide. So you have the assessment first, and then you're going to have the purification process to get rid of the things that no longer serve you. And these may be not just a thought. They may be things in your house. You may have an excessive amount of anything that there's not room enough to hold and could be serving somebody else very well someplace else. So what we find is that when we release some of these things, because what is beneath that, having excessive amounts of things often will denote that there's a fear of not having enough. And if you don't have enough, by law, you get to have more of the same thing. And so I'm just going to tell one other quick story before time for before the program ends, and it's about the wise woman's stone. So there was this wise woman who was traveling in the mountains, and she found a precious stone in a stream. So the next day she met a traveler who was hungry, and the woman opened her bag to share her food. The hungry traveler saw the precious stone and asked the woman to give it to him. She did, without hesitation. And the traveler left rejoicing, now having good fortune, so he thought. He knew that the stone was worth far more than what he thought the woman had imagined, and it gave him a great sense of security, he thought, for a lifetime. However, a few days later, he returned the stone to the woman. He returned to the woman and gave her the stone. And he said to her, "I've been thinking, and I don't know what the true value of this stone is, but I do know that it is beyond what I could imagine, and what I want is not the stone, but for you to give me something even more valuable, something even more precious than this stone. Give me," he said to the woman, "what you have on the inside of you that enables you to give me something so precious as this stone. Give me what you have that enabled you to give me this stone." The author of that story is unknown. So unbeknownst to the traveler, though, what do you think? Just think about it for a second. Unbeknownst to the traveler, he had actually touched gold, the gold that was in his own soul. He had a revelation. He had an insight that now would serve him for the rest of his life. And that's what we're exploring. We're all on a journey here, an inward journey. In distance, it is the shortest journey from your head to your heart. It is your head that often leads us astray, but it is the intellect that we have to get out of the way so that that spiritual realm, the spiritual consciousness, the crystals, the Christ consciousness can evolve. So it's a process. It requires first the understanding and then the willingness, because as long as we don't understand, later when we talk about understanding, it was Thomas the disciple that was always questioning things until he evolved to a certain state of understanding. And as long as we don't have the understanding, then our will or our ego gets in the way. But once we have that wisdom, that insight, the spiritual insight and discernment, we can then sublimate our will to the will of the divine and have then what has already been established. For in the beginning was the Word, and when the Creator spoke the Word, creation happened. And then the Creator said, "Let us make man in our own image and likeness," and then endowed man with the ability to create. And so we are always creating, but we're not always creating according to the desires of our heart. And often, in fact, we create according to the desires of what? Somebody else's heart. For whatever the reason, and it may not be any malintent, but it's just not the purpose for which we've come. So we're learning to look for and discover our own purpose And I want to just say, in bringing this winding down, how many of you have ever had a dream that was deferred? Meaning you had the dream, as I did with Beauty Shop for the Soul, came to me probably, it was a number of years ago, and I would just work with it a little bit here and a little bit there, but never very much. And so what happens to a dream deferred? For the same Langston Hughes that I talked about earlier, that the poem when I opened it up and talked about the night is beautiful and so the faces of our people, this same guy talked about what happens to a dream deferred. Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or does it fester like a sore and then run? Or does it sag like rotten meat, or just turn syrupy sweet? Or does it explode like a heavy load? And so I add to Langston Hughes' poem, you know, he said explode, that's something that happens on the outside. And there's been a lot of that going on where you see people being attacked by other people. That's the external thing. The implosion is on the inside, and that's going to show up like ulcers, like cancer, like whatever the diseases or diseases that happen. And so I encourage you to look for the dreams that you put on the shelf, pull them out, dust them off, and then speak life into your dreams. So I'm going to read you one more little poem that I wrote. I usually put links on them. I don't have one on this one. But it's life and death are in the power of the word. Life and death are in the power of the word. Whether you speak or sing, your vibration will be heard. The little silver box attached is a reminder to you when you open your mouth to let your soul shine through. The sound you release from deep down within will be cherished by those who hear as a gift from a friend. A little silver box tied with a silver bowl will help you to remember to sing from your soul. Well, this was a poem that I wrote and attached to a gift of a little silver box to remind the person who is a singer, and she had a concert, and so I was just offering her some inspiration, I thought. And so I wrote this poem, but I've also used it in workshops where we wanted to be able to look at the power of our words and be reminded of being aware of the words that we speak, the words that come from our hearts, and know that eventually what the law of circulation, another law, is that what goes out from you is what comes back to you. And not only that, in the law of the seed, remember, it's going to multiply after its own kind. It's not going to be tit for tat or one for one. It is going to multiply. So the things you say to yourself about yourself, you want to just become aware, or is it really the truth of who you really are? Is this something that you would allow a friend to say to you about you? No, probably not. And if it's not, why on earth would you be saying it to yourself? We've been conditioned in this culture to think that we should say, okay, so I'm just going to speak a word right here and right now for everybody on this call. Thank you for being here. Call your friends and give them this number, 646-200-4169, every Sunday, 5 p.m. And for those who missed being on the call, you can go online to, Blog Talk Radio, .com/Earth Angels Media. And so we are going to look for you to be here next week. I also have an email address, ourbeautifulsouls@gmail.com.
ourbeautifulsouls@gmail.com. And Joanne, I wanted to just let everybody know that that is 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Sunday right here on Earth Angels Radio.
Thank you so much for that. Carol, can I take us out of here? Thank you so much.
Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Beauty Shop for the Soul with host Joanne Buckner, here on Earth Angels Radio. For more information on Joanne, please visit earthangelsradio.com. You can also contact Joanne by email at ourbeautifulsouls@gmail.com or call her at 702-622-4937. What better way to transform than a Days of Beauty Shop? Beauty Shop for the Souls.